In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Welcome to EMS Office Hours. This is Jim Hoffman.
And this is Josh Knapp, live. This week, you forgot about me. You left me out. So easily replaced.
No. You know what? I put down, if you read the blog notes from last week, I put down that you couldn't make it, and I linked to you in the blog notes. This episode, of course, is sponsored by EMS Manager. Go check them out, emsmanager.net. Get a free trial of their innovative and easy-to-use EMS employee scheduling and management software, and we'll talk a little bit more about them later on. Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into tonight's show, Josh, I know we were just talking a little bit about EMS Week and the wrenches and all. So, you have anything special going on for the general public? I know you said the fire store is gonna try to carry more.
The fire store is doing something. They just put in a special rush order for a bunch of TK1 blues. I don't know what they're doing, so I don't want to blow.
Yeah, blow up the spot.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, they didn't tell me anything. I don't know what they're doing. So, but they did say it was a rush for EMS week, so they're doing something. Some special at the fire store. As soon as I figure out the new shopping cart, Jim, I'm going to do a coupon. So I'll probably have that out in the next few days. Maybe you can help me with that, man.
Yeah.
And we'll do. What do you think is a fair off for EMS week for our hardworking first responders whose corpse are too cheap to buy them the best oxygen wrench made? And they want to get themselves. What do you think is a good discount?
Free.
Let's go up from free a little bit.
Oh, a little more.
Yeah, a little bit more than free.
I don't know.
Come on, I'm leaving it on you. You call it, man.
Don't leave it on to me.
I'll make the coupon. You call it. It's right now, everybody who's listening. It's Jim's decision how much.
John said 97% off. That's a 97% discount.
And John, that's almost what you got on yours. So shut the, whatever. Know. No, come on.
Why don't you give? I'm more of a flat rate thing of like maybe $2 off a ranch or something like that. I'm more of a flat rate type of a guy. I like giving like a flat dollar figure instead of a percent.
Well, you sort of helped me with this shopping cart. What does it work best with? Can it do percentages?
It can do both, sure.
All right, because, if somebody gets more than one item, then, a dollar or $2 goes less than it did before. Why don't we do, 15% off for EMS week?
Sure, we can do that. I think we can do that.
How about that? We'll do 15% off, and if you get out, you can do even better because I'm offering the pouches. There's a special little doohickey at the end that the offers a dollar off the pouches if you buy them right when you're buying the wrench.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good deal for EMS week. So how about that?
All right.
That's special.
Yeah, exactly. All right. In the meantime, anybody wants to check out Josh's wrenches, go check him out at wantnew.com. WANTYNU.com. We ain't nothing till you need us.
Right.
Go check that out, and you can see what we're talking about and some of Josh's wrenches, and keep your eye on one of them so you can add your 15% coupon for that.
And
so
we'll be putting that out on Jim's posts and on the attached to this at some time, and then put it out. It'll be out there. Just look for
it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, tonight, this is sort of a topic that we've discussed a bunch of times.
Ad nauseum.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I kind of got back on this wagon when I saw that story with that woman that called 100 times and, she was arrested because she was calling EMS for pretty much, admittedly for as a taxi ride. And
well, know, that's what happens. You know, they get brazen. They get away with it. They get away with it. They think it's okay. And then they're like, what do you do? What do you do something to me? What are you going to do?
Well, that's the thing. It's you know. And I read the one, you know, some of the I wrote an email about it, you know, because I read the article, and if you read the original article itself that's in the whatever newspaper it was in, you know, the people commenting who are non-EMS people are like shocked that they can't, you know, they can't believe it, you know. And it's like I wrote an email saying, you know, I'm not shocked about it, asking my members if they were shocked over it.
And what did you get responses?
Oh, I got a bunch of responses from people, sure. You know, everything from comments like, you know, one person said they, you know, they believe just as I do, and they employed my candid comments. But, you know, the thing is talks about how EMS just is not, you know, black and white. He gave me a lot of great feedback. You know, everything from, you know, EMS providers making decisions as far as when they should tell someone they can't take an ambulance and whatnot, you know, and the lack of education that we have in order to make those decisions, you know. And see, to me, with an issue like this, with this woman, okay, this is the type of thing where I feel is you don't need to have a lot of education to say to somebody like this, you don't need an ambulance. You know, I'm not talking about the people that you get who call 911 because they just don't know any better. You know, it's their emergency. They're not sure what to do. They're turning to us because they're not sure how to get to the hospital. They're having this abdominal pain, or they're having some sort of issue going on that they just don't know how to handle. And a lot of times, you know, EMS ends up being sort of that go-between, right?
Right.
They're not sure.
That sort of first stop care.
Yeah, they're not sure. Do I take a cab for this, for my hand that's cut up, or do I call an ambulance? I am bleeding a lot. What do? Do they really need an ambulance if they have a cut in their hand and need a couple stitches? No, they can probably take a cab. But for someone who's never experienced it before, or they're seeing their kid that did that, or grandma falls down and hits her head, you know, they're not quite sure. Can they go by cab? Can they take their car? Sure they can. But
yeah, but
sure.
Wait a second. Wait. When grandma falls down and hits her head, that's an ambulance ride. I understand where you're coming from.
No, I mean, I'm not talking about falling down. I'm not talking about just like a mock.
When grandma's walking to the kitchen and bangs her knee, you know, and you know her knee hurts. Yeah, you can take you can pretty much take a cab. You know. You can put grandma in the car, drive her to the hospital yourself. That's it. But, you know, but that difference – and here's the thing. We have to err on the side of caution. We have to. And our system is built around that, of erring on the side of, you know
– This is where – but this is my thing, though, Josh. Is
and
that,
we suffer that.
But my problem is that, like I'm saying, most of the time we do go on the side of caution. We take people who call 911 because they're not sure what to do. They're not quite sure. And we're not going to tell those people who, like you said, grandma bangs her knee or things like that, you don't need an ambulance, sit home. We're going to take them to the hospital because maybe she fractured her knee. You know what I mean? Who knows?
Right. Right.
So we're going to take them to the hospital. You know, to me, the issue becomes these people who are the frequent flyers, who are blatantly abusing the system, knowingly abusing the system, because it's getting them either to another location, it's getting them
a warm meal and a bed.
You know what? I can't even fault. I won't even say that people who are homeless are abusing, because you know they are looking for that warm meal and the bed, and the services that are out there don't always meet.
And
what they need.
And keep in mind that, you know, that's the surface of it. You know, sometimes, especially some of the homeless elderly, they need a doctor to sort of take a look and say, hey, you know, how long have you had that infection on your arm?
Well, it's funny you say that. I mean, how many times have you had the homeless guy who's been out in the cold and you get him on the ambulance and you're going to the hospital, and if it's the same homeless guy, you might have had him, you know, once a week or something, or once every other week or whatever, and you're looking at his feet and it looks like he's got, you know, major frostbite going on.
Right.
And you're saying to yourself, okay, you know what? He's drunk and he's homeless, but maybe something else. This guy might need to see the doctor for this issue. You know, that's not going to get any better with him sitting out in the cold. My issue, Josh, really is the fact that these people that are frequent flyers, like this woman in this article. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I have issues with people. It's sort of like a running joke where I work, where I say that every shift, every 12 hours, no matter what day of the week it is, no matter what crew is working, whatever, everybody gets at least one regular during the shift. And I've been tracking it now, Josh, for at least a month, and it's been true.
Dude, I've had frequent flyers, you know, some of the street people up in the Bronx that, you know, I heard this guy passed away, right? And people actually went to his funeral. You know, that's how it is. I mean, sometimes we're the only people these people have. Then you have the people who I've actually, you know, I don't find frequent flyers as abuse the system as much as, you know, like sometimes these kids, you know, or I once got called by this 18-year-old girl who said, oh, yeah, my toe hurts. And I'm like, what? She said, well, I just don't really want to walk around. I don't have any shoes. Can you get me shoes? It was during the summer. And I'm like, no, there's places you can do that. She said, well, my feet smell. Can you fix that? And I'm like, listen, do you want to go to the hospital or not right now? You know, because otherwise what I'll do is I'll call the cops. And that seemed to shut her up. But the honest truth was, what could I do? If she wanted to go to the hospital, I got to take her. Smelly feet and all.
But the thing is like I said, when you get these people who are just knowingly abusing this system,
I don't think there's anything you can do.
But this is my thing though, and part of the title of this week's thing is provider acceptance. Why are we as an industry accepting this sort of abuse? Why aren't more of us going out there and making calls and writing things to Medicare, Medicaid, you know, local social services places to report this type of abuse. You know, everyone's like, well, it's part of the job, you know, it's job security. I hate that. You know, it's job security, it's all this nonsense.
That's bullshit.
But to me, at the same time of that, you know, you become part of the problem. You're okaying the fact that these people are abusing the system. You're giving it the green light, and at the same time, when you're going to these calls, you're putting yourself at risk responding lights and sirens to these calls, driving to the hospital. You know, now you're out there, you can get into an accident. You're putting yourself at risk when you have to lift these people up. You know, your back can get thrown out. You can hurt your shoulder, and for what? Because you're trying to somehow cover your ass instead of assessing people or this being addressed to the fact that they are clearly abusing the system, that it's not something where somebody called and they're not quite sure what's going on and they called you for a just-in-case type thing and you're going to say, yeah, I'll take you to the hospital.
Well, you want the short answer? The short answer is that really, truly, we don't have the power to make that call. That's higher than our pay grade, you know.
But
and
what
that's
prevents
the sad
us?
Truth.
What prevents us as individuals from dropping dimes repeatedly on these people? Hey, that lives at this address is always calling 911, and she's full of shit.
Well, okay. If you want to dissect that down, number one is HIPAA.
Why you call anonymously? You're calling it out. And why are we bound by HIPAA? Why are we bound? We're not saying anything about her medical condition. We're concerned that she is abusing a needed resource.
I disagree. You're saying something about her medical condition just by calling and saying that she called for an ambulance. What are you allowed to listen? Let's reverse this, Jim. I mean, really, truly, what are you saying? What are you allowed to say about a patient when somebody asks you that is not directly related to the patient care or billing of that patient? What are you allowed to say?
Yeah, but the thing, but I'm talking about something that is.
I hear you on the anonymous part.
No, I hear you. Get the anonymous. The insurance companies are directly related to the patient's care. They're directly related to the patient's care, just like the nurse and the doctor. You tell them.
So you're saying call the insurance company.
I'm not saying call the news and try to get articles. I mean, that's one way to try to handle things. But I'm talking about calling whatever hotline at the insurance company when you suspect abuse, when you're suspecting that somebody is abusing the system. You know, you go and you tell the nurse, listen, I got this lady here. She calls every week. She's full of shit. You know, you tell the nurse that privately. Why can't you do the same thing to the insurance company? So that the insurance company finally tells this person, listen, you can call the ambulance all the hell you want, but we're not paying for it anymore. Because it's obvious,
that
you don't need an ambulance. God.
You know, you put me in a tough spot because I don't want to play devil's advocate against you on this because I'm really of the same mind. I'm saying, why can't you? But what you're throwing at me is scenarios that you really can't address. An insurance company, not in their right mind, is ever going to tell somebody you can't call an ambulance because you called it too many times before. Because the one time, you know, it's like the thing about Cry Wolf. Yeah, that's a great lesson
right,
for 5-year-olds.
Josh, I'm sick of that fucking argument too, because honestly, you know, John said.
But it's true. It's the way we live.
No, but John in the chat room said, what if it was not BS, but it's a real MI? If that's the
case. That's what we're talking about, John.
Well, then, I know, but you know what, Josh? If that's the case, then it's on me as the provider to assess my patient. If I'm assessing the patient, and I'm not saying this woman that abused this 911, she called over 100 times.
Okay. I think I got you. Let me restate what you were basically saying. You're saying that if, you know, we're able to alert the insurance company that this person is potentially abusing the system for non-essential transportation, okay? So far, am I online?
That's a nice way to say it. Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, that's me, man. That's why I'm your co-host, because sometimes I wordsmith it, sometimes I put it in more acceptable language, all right? So just follow me out here, all right? Now, what they're going to say to that patient is, we are aware that you are now under observation for potential abuse. That means that every time you call an ambulance, we will examine why you called an ambulance, what your treatment was in the hospital, and if we find that there was no reason for you to call an ambulance, we will refuse to pay. Is that more acceptable?
Yeah, well, that's what the insurance companies, you know, should be doing.
Well, they're going to tell you they do that. They're going to tell you they do that. They, of course, they're not going to just pay carte blanche. Now, some places just don't examine it because they go, it's a $400 ambulance ride with a $15,000 ER visit. Well, we don't really need to spend the time examining what we've done.
And that's true. Listen, I'm not saying, you know, as a paramedic, as an EMT, you get somebody and you go, oh my God, this is such bullshit. I'm calling the insurance company. I'm talking about patients. You know, I keep referring to this article only because I know that everyone out there listening has had these types of patients that have, you know, everyone out there has frequent flyers.
Hey,
everybody,
dude, it's also the system we live in. You know, I told you about that article, The Bitter Pill, right? About hospital billing and how they work and what they bill the insurance companies.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody out there just Google The Bitter Pill PDF. Otherwise, it's a Time magazine thing, and unless you're a subscriber, you gotta pay for it. But if you do the PDF, you should find the whole article. It's 28 pages, and it will freaking tear your guts out on how billing is done for hospitals. But the bottom line is that why do when they can potentially make money from that call and get reimbursed from it, why would they look at it too closely? You see, we're the fucking
The hospitals look at it that way.
We're the mules of the system.
Yeah, but now though, Josh, the insurance companies now as well, especially like Medicaid and Medicare, they're looking at the reasons why patients are going to the hospital, and they're looking at what diagnosis they've been giving, how long they're staying, and they're realizing that these patients are abusing it, and they're actually not paying the hospitals now if the patient comes back for the same complaint in a certain period of time.
What's an ambulance? What's an ambulance cost, Jim? I mean,
it depends. Where you're working, $400, $600,
even $1,200. It's pennies. You know, you could have one test that's 10 times that.
Right, so then why,
in the emergency room, and every insurance company will pay for it.
Well, then you know what? I mean, it's right. I know what you're saying.
Your blood screens are $1,500.
Same way that credit card companies look at, or banks even look at disputes on charges. They say to themselves, okay, how much is it going to cost us to investigate this charge the person is complaining is fraud versus just reversing it and eating the cost?
Right.
You know, they look at it from that viewpoint. And hospitals do that. And even as far as the ambulances go, you know, I guess
The bottom line is we're not valued enough. We're not valued enough, and that's the answer. We're the mules of the system. So they don't give a crap. They're gonna say, you are the medical taxi. We don't get, if you do something along the line, that's great. We don't really even care.
And I think I go back to a little bit about what one of my
members. You just
members,
want to save us the aggravation and us the wear and tear of these frequent flyers abusing the system. Because really, who are they abusing? They're abusing us. We're not
abusing us. I mean, they are abusing the nurses and the doctors and stuff as well. You know, and yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it. For me, it's the point. I'm looking at it on the viewpoint of our. You know, safety and things like that. You know, the I'm trying to read my little you know, thing here. I don't know. I'm trying to read what I want to point out from my email that I sent out.
All right.
Hang on just a second. I can't read the goddamn thing fast enough.
We love you. We'll wait for you.
Well, pretty much what I said was, you know, I don't really care how many times somebody calls an ambulance or whatever. You know, if there's a doubt, we take him to the hospital, things
right.
like that. My main concern is the fact that, you know, we're just sort of accepting it as part of the job. You know, we're accepting it as going along to get along. But yet, this is the type of thing that we're accepting as a profession and the type of thing that can get us hurt or can even get us killed on the extreme point of it. You know,
you're right. Every call that we're not – that's not necessary, every time we put on those lights and sirens and go through a single red light or even just drive on the road – forget about red lights. Just drive on the road. We're putting our lives at risk. We're putting trained first responders, equipment.
I mean, think about
you know, everything.
All right. I like what you're saying. You think about some of these people who do that. I mean, I had this homeless guy in Brooklyn. I could care less. He used to call us at least – every other day, right? But instead of just calling and saying, hey, you know, I'm cold or whatever, or I'm hungry, he called in as a chest pain. So what do you get? You get an engine company, you get in a cop car, you get in a paramedic unit, an EMT unit, you get all
And why you know why he called it in as chest pain?
Yeah, because he knows he's going to get all this attention.
He's going to get a faster response, too.
Right.
Because if he calls it in as a sick, he'll get the nearest BLS. It'll be a priority 5. And they'll go lights and sirens, but they're not going to go balls.
And something John mentioned in the chat, in talking about, you know, having us initiate the refusal. And
yeah.
We walk a fine line with that. And we have to be able to understand our assessment skills and know, you know, and stand behind them. And I think that's going to entail more training, not just medically and clinically, but also legally and understanding, you know, when someone, you can tell somebody, listen, we've evaluated you. You don't require an ambulance. By all means, if you want to go to the hospital, you can take a private private means to get there. But
well,
you
don't they do that in some systems?
Some systems they do. Yeah, some there are some states out there that are doing it.
I wonder what the data is from that.
You know, on that, and a lot of them do it too, Josh, because of the frequent flyers, because it's their way to sort of reach out to these frequent flyers and give them better options.
Right.
Because some of them don't realize that they can get to the hospital. They can get that warm meal and a bed in another form other than calling for an ambulance. You know.
Well, I had a friend of mine. He was an EMT. I sort of lost touch with him. But before he became an EMT, he was with the homeless outreach. And that's what, he said they sort of did. They sort of jumped into these situations and were sort of the first response for the homeless, sort of picked them up and sometimes interceded before they went to the hospital because they didn't need to go to the hospital. They needed shelter. They needed some basic level of care, but it wasn't medical care.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want to make this sound either like I'm cold hearted and I'm not looking
you
out
are.
For need.
I don't care.
I mean, we know. I am. You know, I can be the angry medic like anybody else out there could be the angry medic. But to me, when I look at these types of things, something I always end this show with, a lot of my other shows and podcasts and my emails and newsletters and everything else, I always end it with stay safe, and safety is a big thing for me. And I see a lot of providers out there who get hurt just on the day-to-day jobs that we do, when on legitimate jobs. They make a mistake. They don't lift something right. They're not guarding for unexpected movement, something like that. They get injured, But yet now we have these people that are abusing us, and we sit back and we take it and we accept it, as part and we give arguments like we've been talking about so far about, well, we're covering our ass, we're making sure just in case they're having a heart attack, just in case, maybe something really is going wrong this time, But the bottom line is, it's bullshit no matter how you look at it. You can say what if, but what if we just freaking assessed our patients and figured out this person doesn't need an ambulance? I mean,
right.
I've had plenty of patients, over the years who I know were called many, many times, and I've had it a few times where they did call, and it ended up being a legitimate call. And I treated the patient appropriately, forgetting my previous encounters with them. But that's what we as professionals that we're supposed to be should be doing, not getting the call and saying, oh, my God, I've had this person 1,000 times. I'm not even going to take a blood pressure. That you cannot do, But
that what happens is you start to get burnt out on these people and you pick
right.
up some scale habits and it comes up and bites you in the end. And it's that's the thing we have to constantly guard against, isn't it? Burnout, and these are the jobs that just add to that flavor. They don't make it easier. So, now you're talking about sort of a two-pronged approach. One is, we need to do something about it. And by being proactive, you certainly defend against burnout. But, also, you got to be proactive in the sense that you always are looking out for yourself. And part of looking out for yourself is not making those stupid errors that get you screwed on the job that otherwise just would be nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, my thing is I just hate this attitude, Josh, of
Well, I think you're on to something,
the what-if thing. What if it's really...
All right.
What if this time they're vague complaint of abdominal pain, they've got something going on? You know what I mean?
Sometimes the savings in the system can be by the little things, by the little dollar, by the little pennies and dimes that they save in the system. And yes, these abusers should in some way, have to compensate the system for their abuse. And I agree with all of that. What you sort of brought up, well, why don't we call something? Why don't we? What if the companies got a little smarter and said, we're going to create a hotline for first responders only, because that will save them from the investigative, you know, they have to dig through the paperwork on themselves and
right.
allow us to flag jobs that we think are abusive. Now, granted, probably 80% of those are going to be stuff that they say, no, this isn't abusive. We'd like you to take the patient to the hospital anyway. We're happy to cover that. But maybe 20% they'll look into and say, you know what? It shows that when, you know, Mrs. Smith was taken to Mercy Hospital, there's no ER record of Mrs. Smith in the ED. You know, where did she go? She went to the beauty parlor around the corner.
Yeah, or she went,
you know,
to, she went to her sister's house that lives
down the crazy-ass abuse.
Yeah.
I mean, those that abuse.
Well, like you said, they might look into the 20%, and maybe 2% out of that 20 they're going to find out is truly the ones that are just totally blatantly value.
Pretense.
Right.
No pretense.
Exactly.
They're just abusing. It's my free cab ride.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think, you know, I'm gonna
make a mention about something you said in your last comment, but I just want to go ahead and quickly talk about EMS Manager for a moment. They are sponsoring this episode of EMS Office Hours. I know I've been talking about this for a few weeks now, but really you should try out this offer for yourself. If you're looking for an EMS employee management, employee scheduling software, check this out for yourself, guys. It really does take the chore out of having to schedule and manage the employees. I mean, you're talking about everything from letting employees and management both access the software anywhere from they have internet connection, mobile apps, online. If there's an internet connection, they can go ahead and get access to it. And it's really cool because both managers and staff can make requests for changes. They can approve time off, approve picking up of shifts. They can actually send out messages through this to the employees. You know, if a shift comes up, they can actually push out a message via text or IM or messaging software to the staff. You know, everything's in the cloud on this, and the price is really based on the size of an organization. So this way, it always ends up being affordable. It doesn't matter how big or small your organization is. And like I said, it's all web-based, so it's in the cloud, so there's no additional IT cost that anyone has to worry about. So go check it out, guys. There's lots of free training, free tech support on this, and all of the system updates are free as well. Go check them out. It's at emsmanager.net. I want to just take a minute as well, just personally, just to thank them for sponsoring EMS Office Hours and also for sponsoring all the other EMS programs from the ProMed Network. EMS Manager is really proud to sponsor us and all EMS providers and managers through this sponsorship and everything that we do here. So show your support for them. Take a few minutes. Go check out their free trial at emsmanager.net. It's totally customizable, really cool to sort of play around with and see if it's something you want to get for your agency. It's from Alatech. That's the company. It's EMS Manager for Online Employee Scheduling and Workforce Management. Again, guys, emsmanager.net. It's free and customizable employee scheduling software. Go check them out. Make sure if you do, tell them that EMS Office Hours, Josh and Jim sent you there. All right, so they know that we're sending over some quality providers that want to try out their system. So make sure you tell them that we sent you if you head on over there and try that out, especially EMS Week here. Go ahead and give them a shot.
Way to suck up to our audience, Jim.
Well,
we're sending over only quality providers.
Let me tell you something. I'm not sucking anybody. I know that the providers.
I've heard John speak. I'm wondering about that quality provider stuff. You hear that, my
John,
friend?
John is the exception, though. Well, you know, the thing is, I'm going to say this too. I mean, since you brought that up, before we get back into something I want to mention, you know, the people that listen to not just EMS Office Hours, but even John's webcast, Union 801, the webcast podcast, listen to the Medicare.
People who are involved.
Right. The people that are engaged, guys, you know, I know if you're listening to this podcast, you listen to the other podcasts, you read the EMS blogs that are out there, not just the stuff you see on the big EMS sites like GEMS and EMS One and stuff. I'm talking about the us small fry guys here that are out there trying to get the word out there and promote change and to get
raw and real, not candy coated.
Yeah, get the juices flowing. Get you thinking about the challenges that are facing us as EMS providers, as professionals, and trying to make the industry, more professional, getting us moving forward. You know, the ones that are interested in doing that are engaged, are the ones that are listening to the podcast, are the ones that are reading the blog posts, that are on the Facebook groups, that are in Twitter checking stuff out. You know, these are the guys and the providers out there that are the ones that are going to end up really, I think, end up moving EMS forward, as we go on in the future. You know what I mean? It's not the people that are sitting there in the front of the truck bitching because they're getting back-to-back calls and they didn't get to eat. You know what I mean? It's going to be the one sitting in the front of the truck, taking a few minutes to take out their iPhone or their, you know, their Droid or whatever it is, and look up a podcast, read a blog, you know, download some of the. I mean, a lot of these bloggers now too, they're putting out free Kindle books that you can download that gives little insights about EMS and things that you can do better or tips on things. You know what I mean? More or less, the people that know that it's going to be a long time in this system before you know everything. You know, and when I say long time, I mean never.
Yeah.
You know, you're never going to know everything. I still don't know everything. I've been doing this over 20 years. So I still don't know everything that goes on in the EMS. And the stuff
every
that
time
I think
you
I
do,
know,
yeah.
And the stuff that I do know that I am comfortable with, eventually it changes a little bit. Or there's a little nuance to it that I might not know. I mean, I just did a webinar last week on automatic transport ventilators. And, you know, in preparing for the presentation, I went over a lot of respiratory stuff, you know, in order to be able to answer questions for the attendees. And it was stuff that I picked up that I wasn't really 100% comfortable with off the fly because I don't do a lot of transport ventilator jobs. You know what I mean? I mean, I know them. I've had them before, but I wasn't 100% where I'm doing them every day. So doing a lot of that stuff and sort of refreshing my own memory, you know, lets me realize that, yeah, I still don't know everything. So people that are engaged with us on these shows and stuff, you know, my hat's off to them for being engaged and for, you know, trying to be part of the solution, trying to be part of the change. And even if that change is just one little thing, you know what I mean? One little part of a protocol or maybe the way you're doing something at your agency, that can really make the biggest difference and get other people and other agencies sort of picking up on it. You know, so, all right, let me get my soapbox with that before the rest of the show ends up.
No, I mean, you know, it's an important point. It's a good point. And it's a shout out to the people who are listening to us that we appreciate them. You know, we're not on every week because we absolutely have nothing better to do. We're on every week because we want to increase the dialogue. We want to get the conversation going. Like you've said many times, we're not here to solve a problem. We're not the solution.
Exactly. I mean, we have suggestions. We have strong opinions.
But we want to get the discussion going.
You know, sometimes we have unchanging opinions.
Shine a little light.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the key, I think, with it. You know, one thing you mentioned, Josh, when you talked before about having the hotline, which I think is a great idea for insurance companies to have, for hospitals to even have. You know, maybe it could be. You know, is the fact that you have to be careful with that because, and this is coming from one of the emails that I got from one of the responses, is that the concern that some people have, and I think I would probably be concerned with this too, is that when you have something that's easily reportable, right, you're going to get people out there who are trying to get out of work, right? They're looking at the frequent flyer, like I said. You know, to me, you're intoxicated, that's homeless. You know what? They're a frequent flyer, but would they fall into that hotline, you know, sort of scenario? To me, they wouldn't. You know what I mean? But there are people out there who would say anything that they feel is a frequent flyer. They're going to be on the horn trying to complain. And like like you said, what's going to happen, you're going to have 80% of those complaints or sort of whistleblowing or whatever you want to call it is going to be unfounded. You know, and then how long is it going to take before these companies say, you know, what do we have this hotline for? We're paying money for it. We're spending resources on investigating. 80% of these things are you know, unfounded. These EMS people don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Well, that's a possible backlash. That's absolutely possible backlash. But another way to approach it would be, how about if the insurance companies looked at it and said, you know what, everybody who provides care is a potential reporter of fraud. And we've seen the insurance industry ads, you know, about, you know, ratting on your neighbor, you know,
right.
Hey, you know, that hurts you too. When they're out and getting disability and there's nothing really wrong with them and stuff like that. You know, lying on your disability is a crime and all that other stuff. Well, you know, any insurance fraud is a crime. So what if instead, if you wanted higher quality reporting, you had to clear the individual, provide CME hours, you know, attributable to your research, and say, you have to go through this 8-hour course or whatever it is on insurance reporting or on however you want,
sure.
You know, system abuse, you know, and then, right.
I can get on board with that because, you know, you see so many people out there who complain.
How many people would sign up for that?
Well, you know what? I don't know. I mean, I would sign up for it because I'm always looking for something new and interesting with stuff
get
like that.
Get you off the bus for a day.
But here's the thing, though. So many people complain that they always get the same CMEs, right, every year. Chest pain, STEMI, stroke, you know, all the same shit over and over again. But something like this, right, you offer something that's a little different that directly applies to what we're doing out there in the field, you know, I think would help us, you know. And I also think, too, Josh, I mean, even if I'm also thinking, like, what part in all this do the hospitals – or should the hospitals be playing? You know, if they're seeing this abuse go on, you know, why are they, you know, contending with it as well? You know, and I know part of it, like you said earlier, they can bill, you know.
They can bill. I think that's the biggest one. I can't stress enough that everybody listening to this should see that article, the Bitter Pill. It is frickin', you know, knowledge is power.
You know,
and to understand –
I was going to say, make sure you send me a link to that so I can put it in the show notes.
I'll get it right now when you respond to this. But it is absolutely essential that we understand the money trail to understand where our position is in the first response system. You know, a lot of times we get lost in the idea that, hey, we're on a level of medical professionals, we provide medical care, we provide a first response, we do this, there's a professionalism involved in that, there's knowledge involved in that, but like any other business, there's also the money side.
Right.
And
if
you don't know that, how can you sit there and say you don't get paid enough for what you do? You don't, you know, we don't bill enough for what we provide. We're not providing, you know, all the right things that this person really needs in the field. If you don't understand how it's paid for, you don't understand jack.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it. I mean, it's definitely something that people need to be aware of. And I think when you talk about even like a CME, like you're mentioning, I mean, you know, you can do a 2-3 hour CME and talk about things like you're mentioning, how does it get? What are we getting paid for? Why are we getting paid? Where is it coming from? How do insurance companies figure that out? You know, when I talk to people about things like Medicare, Medicaid, and stuff like that, everyone you talk to has a different take on it. They have a different understanding of how ambulances are getting paid, what qualifies, you know, for it, how the transports get billed. Who gets paid on transports, and everyone you talk to gives you a different answer. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think
they don't understand it.
Right, and I think at the minimum that EMS providers should have some training and some awareness. You know, I want to say training, but an awareness sort of classes that go over, you know, the big insurance companies. You know, how do they pay us? What do they look at when they're paying us? you know, what are they viewing? You know, that would help administrators when they're billing, when their employees understand, you know, what's getting billed when they turn in the paperwork, versus you know, sort of just writing it up, you know, haphazardly and not justifying the transport. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and you know what, you're in a system that actually has a system where you differentiate between BLS and ALS. So you can sit there as a medic on the call and say, this is BLS, you handle it, and the BLS provider will handle the call and tech the call. And the person will be billed appropriately for that. I work in a system that your bill depends on what ambulance you get. So if there's nobody else available, and they send ALS, you're getting an ALS bill.
Yeah.
And you know what? You may not have been billed. You may not have been provided ALS services, or even not that you were that those services were withheld, but you didn't need them. So you know, it's like it's like selling you undercoating when you didn't even ask for it.
You gotta have the undercoating, Josh.
Holy crap! This is what the hospitals are getting away with. And this is why, you know, everybody bitches about medical insurance costs and everything else. This is why. So, you know, until you understand, don't bitch about it.
And I think that the hospitals, I think if – forget
I just posted the PDF.
All right. You know, forget even the hospitals, their payment. But, I mean, even them at some point realize – they're not getting paid everything either. Because, like I said – Medicare now is doing things where they're looking at why a patient went in and what they went in for, and you know, telling the hospital that, you know, that pretty much they're telling the hospital, you didn't do your job. The patient's back for the same freaking complaint, and these are the patients that are abusing. That every time they call, it's chest pain. Every time they call, they can't breathe, right? And then they get to the hospital. The hospital evaluates them and sends them home. So now the burden becomes on the hospital, you know, for treating this patient for this complaint and then releasing them. But then the patient's back, you know, a day later for the same complaint, you know. So these insurance companies now are looking, and they're looking to not pay hospitals for almost as a not – you didn't do your job type thing. Instead of looking at the patient and saying, what are you going to – the hospital for, they've already said, you know, you've already been cleared X amount of time for chest pain, and it's never been anything besides your imagination or whatever. But then we go back to, like we mentioned earlier, you know, what about that one time where the chest pain is generally a chest pain? You know,
You'll never get
the hospital's screwed. The hospital's screwed. We're screwed. So the hospital has to evaluate these people.
Right.
Now, I know of a few people who are frequent flyers who the insurance companies contacted them directly and said, listen, we're not paying for this anymore. You keep calling for this complaint, and they're not finding anything. So you're going to the hospital for nothing. Yeah. So
how did you find out about that?
I have my secret sources. I have secret sources.
Oh,
I'm the EMS professional.
No, but that's really crazy. I've never heard of that.
But so check it out, though. So what happens, right? What I noticed happened, I only know of two individuals that this happened with, right? But they are major abusers of the system, okay? Major abusers of calling 911. Not your average person who might just call once a month or whatever. These are people that are calling every other day, sometimes twice a day, that type of thing, right?
So what did they do? They took them into the back of the ED and just gave them the special injection, and
no,
then they were never heard of again?
I know. Imagine that. Someday.
Oh, sorry.
So the what I've noticed happened.
Hey, thank you for being an organ donor.
Yeah,
just count backwards from 10.
I know. Sometimes you want to tell them in the back of the ambulance, listen, you might have a problem breathing. I really give you a problem breathing. So the thing is that one thing I noticed is that these individuals who were approached and said that they are considered frauding the insurance company, right, because they're calling for the same thing and having no diagnosis. Now, when they're calling, they're changing their complaint every time. So the patient is getting smart where they're changing their complaint. So now, instead of calling for chest pain all the time, now they call, oh, I can't breathe. Next time, oh, my arm is numb. Oh, the next time, I got a bad headache. The next time, oh, I'm dizzy. They jazz it up. So now the buck's off of them for the fraud end of it, and now it's back on us as providers to do our assessment and all that stuff and document appropriately, and the burden's on the hospital to do all their testing and everything. And then you're right back to where, again, where they're still abusing, but the cost is still being incurred, and the risks that we're taking are still happening, but they're still getting their ride to the hospital. You know, they win, we lose. They're winners, we're losers.
Yeah.
We said this before, we don't have the answer. I don't have the answer.
Right.
I wish the hell I had the answer for it. I mean, maybe like Eric is saying in the chat room, some of this stuff, some of this stuff is, prepaying or assessing them and saying, you don't really need an ambulance, but if you want an ambulance, you have to pay ahead of time. Type thing, you know. Maybe that's the case. Who knows?
You know, I just like what happened. Yeah, and one of the things that I wanted to ask him is, you know, what happens if the person's unconscious? What if they can't make that decision? You know, what if it's an MCI where you just, you know, had a bus explosion and you have a whole bunch of people? You know, who pays? Do they have to pay for that?
You know, that type of thing. I can't see the sign. To sign it, but I think what Eric is mentioning is are patients who are those frequent flyers who are assessed by the paramedics and deemed not requiring an ambulance transport. You know, those patients who are then told, you know, you don't require an ambulance, and if you want us to take you, we'll still take you, but you got to pay up front because your insurance company probably won't pay because it's not going to show as a medical necessity for you to be taken to the hospital by ambulance. I think that's more along the lines of what they're looking at, you know. Josh, hang on. I do have a caller real quick. We're almost out of time. Wow. I want to give him a chance here.
Yeah, yeah.
John, are you with us?
Am I? You there?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
All right. What's going on?
Okay.
So... I've been listening in for about a good 10-20 minutes, and I kind of agree with what you guys say, and I think that I really hate those watermelon.
You know, I kind of knew. I had my finger over the hang up button. I can look at the name and I'm saying to myself, and then I hear the accent and I'm like, you know, this is some kind of a crank call. This is what happens, Josh, when you get popular. All right. Get the crank call. I'm surprised he didn't say Baba Booey and then hang up on me or something. All right. I knew that was going to happen. At first he almost had me because he didn't just do it right away. I sort of had my,
look at that. How the hell does he get so large in the chat room?
I don't know.
These are these people. Why the hell did you hang up with me? Because you're a racist SOB.
I don't know if he did it or not. Please respond. I don't know. Well, I had to clear the queue because of the comment, but we're just about out of time anyway, so I can't really get to any more phone calls today, guys. So I see a Tommy one in the queue too. Tommy, try to call about it next week, brother, or maybe make a comment in the show notes for me. I'd love to hear what you had to say. We don't really have that much time really right now to get into any more phone calls, but I appreciate you jumping in there. Guys, anybody has any comments or questions on what we're talking about, throw them over in the show notes for me so that I can, address them. All right. Please respond. I'm going to check with all your dead children. We're getting lots of spam.
Well, it's almost like hacked, right?
Yeah, everyone is, everyone's going crazy, you know.
What the hell?
I know, it's funny.
I love this.
Everyone's so funny.
Yeah, right. Well, that's my answer.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, we're back to regular. We're back to our regular scheduled hour now.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly. Well, the funny thing is, I'm trying to.
You know what? Hey, dumbass! Why don't you show us how you got the larger lettering? I like that.
I know, right? Exactly. It's just
I do. I like that part.
Yeah. She has some secrets. Let's please respond.
And why did he start out? I mean, you know. Plus, if you're gonna start out, you have to put the right number of letters in.
Yeah.
So fucking faggot would be F-U-C-K-I-N-G. That would be 7 letters, not 6.
Oh, okay.
Dip.
People too funny.
Click on the T next to all you.
I know.
Well, thanks for all your right. lovely comments in the chat room. Thanks to those who called.
Always interesting, right? That's the hallmark of our job, Jim.
Right, exactly. And anyone listening, anyone that tried to call in who was seriously calling in to make a comment about the show, I appreciate your phone call. Please join us again at another time, and we will try to get you on the air. My hat's off to the gentleman with the Australian accent who called in and got his little one-liner in there. You caught me on that, although I was suspicious from the get-go that you didn't have me 100%. All right, Josh, let's end it there.
Sounds good, Jim.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Eric, thank you for popping. I haven't seen you in a while, so I appreciate you coming in into the show. Hopefully, guys, we'll see you all next week. Josh, anything you want to end with before we head out?
No, we're all good. Look for the special for the 15% off for the EMS Week special. We'll have that up shortly. Definitely hook into the bitter pill. Get educated on this stuff. And as for Eric, what we're going to be talking about next week, we will post soon.
Yeah, who knows? Well, make sure you go check out.
Eric, you have something you want us to talk about next week?
Yeah, Eric, don't forget, you can always email me. Give me any suggestions that you might have as well, brother. I'd be more than happy to pop them in here. Don't forget, guys, check out John Broyle's site and his blog post as well. On Saturday, he's got a show coming up about between blurring the lines between BLS and ALS. He's over at One Union 801, the webcast, right here at Blog Talk Radio. Go feel free, people in the chat room, to go and flame his chat room.
Absolutely. He's the guy. Listen, don't mess with him. He's in the Army. He knows what to do with you guys.
Right.
So,
don't
try it on his page.
Yeah. There's like 4 people in the chat talking all dirty and stuff, and they're talking to each other. No one's looking at them. It's like I got a chat room full of 100 people that they're getting some attention. I don't understand.
Oh, God.
All right, Josh. I guess I'll talk to you later. I'll see you next week.
All right, brother.
All right, guys. Have a good night. All right, everybody, that's it for me tonight. Don't forget, you have a comment, question, you want a suggestion for one of the shows, be sure to send it over to me. My email is jhoffman@emsdevsafety.com. Until next week, guys, as always, stay safe.